It is time for the Media Beat with David Terechuk. David, of course, joins us on a Friday morning here on Robinhood Radio. David has got his own website, themediabeat.us. You could find him sometimes on the Huffington Post. Also, he's a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief, and he had a big program on this past weekend. Good morning, David.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
So I'm wondering, did you watch any of the dramatics yesterday?
Oh, I was one of the few people in America who didn't watch it.
Yeah.
No, I had to watch it. Professional obligation, whether I wanted to or not. It was a media event after all. I mean, I think every single network and every single cable news network absolutely did clear their schedules for it completely. Radio 2, at least serious radio news networks did, and it was unavoidable.
I watched portions of it, and I have to put, this is terrible. I put a sports analogy to it for one reason. The Republicans changed strategy in midstream. It's a good thing they did for them. By the woman that they chose to do the questioning for them. I tell you what, she came from Maricopa County. Everybody thought she was going to be a disaster. She was one of the fairest. The way she asked those questions was,
I agree with truly your sporting metaphor.
Was truly, truly spectacular. And when they got to Lindsey Graham in the second round, Lindsey Graham made the decision to dump her and go with the mean-spirited men questions and empower their justice to be. And it was truly an amazing thing to watch how it totally turned
from a political gamesmanship. That was the interest. You know, what bugs me, and I'm so sorry, is that I would have loved to hear some panel analysis of that. And yet, all I heard was, well, my opinion of the this and the this, and they shouldn't have this and the this, and I didn't like her. It's like,
the Republican Party obviously got the word to make it not like Donald Trump, and they did. And
sure.
Is it going to be successful? Probably. I think unless a miracle happens, I think there might be two female votes that will vote no, but there's probably going to be a red state Democrat that's going to vote yes. But I will say this, not questioning anybody who told, I can't tell who told the truth or not. I know who I thought was more believable. The thing that got me, David, and I'm going to ask you this, and Jill, I'm going to ask you this question. I didn't really watch a lot of it the first half and a lot of it the second half, but I did watch in the second half how mean-spirited and conspiracy theory the Supreme Court judge to be was, which that surprised me. Not his answers about how he was innocent, but how he tied in the Clintons. All of a sudden, it's the first time I've ever heard anybody being appointed to the Supreme Court to bring in politics, and that's the thing that scared me away from him. I'll back away now, but that's the thing that really got to me about him and made him totally unbelievable to me was he really brought politics to the forefront.
Well, clearly both sides were strategizing before the event and worked very hard on preparing set-piece approaches to it. And you're right, the Republicans particularly did not hold to the game plan, jettisoning the female prosecutor from Arizona. And the useful, what they thought originally would be a useful device of having her doing the questioning instead of the all-male Republican side of the Senate committee. And indeed, the prepping of the contender, to keep on with the sporting metaphor, I guess, the contender Kavanaugh himself. He clearly was there to present, it had been decided, and he clearly went along with this game plan, presenting himself as a man coming out fighting. And that in itself was an extraordinary contrast with his previous hearing, and indeed with the contrast with the Fox News personal interview he did, which in itself was an extraordinary break with precedent, wasn't it? Just to have uh, uh, a, a, a candidate for the Supreme Court campaigning in public for his job.
The other thing,
I'm
sorry, but just as for that Fox News, that the Fox thing on Monday night, and this is the reason that I'm mentioning it. How fascinating is it that we are at a point where people actually want to talk about their sexual experience?
Well, yes, you can't go on television without talking about a sexual experience. Perhaps that's the perception of many people, that the TV is a good venue for bringing up one's previously considered
private
substantial
life.
To taboos. You know, the taboos are broken. Taboos are there to be broken. And heaven's sake, we've been doing a lot of taboo breaking in the course of this exercise. But the point of the game plan was that clearly the ground upon which it was agreed clearly involved. I say clearly. I'm drawing some conclusions from an awful lot of very obvious performance points, and indeed the talking points that were employed. Kavanaugh himself gave a very good, belligerent impersonation of President Trump himself, and if the leaks from the Oval Office are to be believed, and I think they probably are, Trump was very displeased with the choir boy approach that Kavanaugh had been adopting before. And indeed, just before Kavanaugh's appearance at this special hearing yesterday, the president himself went on air to say that he was open to persuasion by Professor Ford in her claims of sexual assault against her by Kavanaugh. But, I mean, we can take that perhaps with a pinch of salt, but he also made it clear that he was going to watch Kavanaugh's performance very carefully, and he would be open to changing his mind about the nomination. Well, I'm not sure about that, but it's clearly a lot of pressure on Kavanaugh. And what we got in the end, I believe, is a portrait of a man under pressure, quite clearly under pressure from many, many sources. And I just wonder what any dispassionate viewer would make of that. He was a man under pressure. It was an emotional performance, and he was clearly trying and failing much of the time to keep a grip on his emotions. And is this was it the performance of a man that we would want on the highest court in the land? Not exactly a demonstration of his capacity for being neutral, or indeed simply a capacity for maintaining an even keel in a difficult situation.
But then
I wonder, for instance, if Judge Kavanaugh saw someone in his court, the present level of the courts that he's been in, before, if he had someone before him testifying in that kind of style, I wonder what kind of conclusion he would draw about the evidence being presented by such a witness.
It was an interesting. I personally thought the way she presented herself, she never accused him of a sexual assault. She never accused him of.
She was very precise in her language.
She was really precise and
never said more than she could know. And often, of course, confessed to things that she didn't know, couldn't remember, couldn't place. In many ways, was a very credible witness, in part because of those weaknesses in her testimony. And why wouldn't there be weaknesses in her testimony 30-something years after?
The thing about her testimony that got to me, which really did place her in where I thought was just one line, when 2 weeks afterwards she went to the supermarket with her parents. And I know as a teenager, if I went to a store with my parents, I was always yards away from my mother. I was always yards away. I entered my own, but she identified him in that store.
The young man alleged to be in the room with them.
Yeah. And that was pretty amazing. It's going to be interesting to see what happens, because I'll leave the rest of the show to you guys. What if he gets the two votes and he gets flaked? He'll be in, But it'll be very interesting if the Democrats have, let's say, quote, a blue wave. They'll open up an investigation on these charges, and they'll try to get him impeached.
Talking about, in fact, getting Clarence Thomas impeached as well.
Yeah, I have no doubt about that. That will happen. So, the country as a whole is a loser in this whole sordid mess. And
which brings me to the media's role in all of this. And I note with glee that both sides found themselves. The New York Times was deleting a Twitter account that they had. Tell us your opinion. I mean, really? And Fox. And tell us your opinion of how it's going. I wonder who thought of that and put it up. Meanwhile, somebody.
Well, it's interesting how it has become an enormous opportunity for telling us how it's going. Proper and would never say particularly populist medium, C-SPAN, became a kind of national confessional yesterday, with people calling in to talk about their own sexual experiences that were memories of which were triggered by the hearings yesterday.
Which brings me, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I just, you know, this is the, in my view, not particularly great thing about social media. While it does level the playing field,
C-SPAN's not social media.
I understand.
That's a part of the most dreary legacy media that always being bewailed.
That's
that
not, I'm not
to the fore in the new world, the
right.
New world of touchy-feely broadcasting.
I'm not talking about C-SPAN per se. As a matter of fact, I was safely streaming C-SPAN until I heard what I'm talking about is that people are now so involved with their news and their life that they find it an opportunity to discuss their experiences. And I think that once you have turned news into a therapy session, you're kind of screwed in the information department. But that's just my opinion.
No, well, I think you have a good point. What is the medium for? Is a good question to ask at points like this. We know that these issues are very hot button for many people. And of course, the fact that they're being discussed at all is some suggestion of a societal shift overall. And I'm sure it is. But does that mean that we end up with the media itself forgetting its prime purpose of being a communicator of facts and information? Let's see how they behave. So far, they're not exactly performing a fact-based service. That's not what's coming out of almost all the media. I mean, there are cool heads left, I'm glad to say, but precious few in the last 24 hours.
Yeah, and I will cite CJR.
Absolutely, the Columbia Journalism Review.
And the reason that I'm citing it is because one of the things that did come out as this was being just laid out gradually is how under privacy assault, just how aggressive so many people were from a media standpoint in finding out the story from this woman who was trying to remain, you know, fairly deal with it discreetly. And
sure. She didn't want to be sitting in that seat yesterday.
No.
But that's where we ended up. And yes, the media are part of that pressure to get her out in the open, drop her anonymity, and become part of this spectacle. That's in many ways that's very regrettable.
And it's a question of just pointing out, you know, when you are allegedly in the fact finding business. I mean, there are enough, shall we say, and not alternative, but actual facts out there and conflicting bits of data that
yes, absolutely, that, and I think it's very telling about the whole exercise, the whole day, both the morning going one way and the afternoon going another, and the total dropping in the end of any pretense that there was a there was cool, dispassionate prosecutorial witness examination going on. When the prosecutor's role was just ditched completely by Lindsey Graham on the Republican side, and just turning into a partisan yelling match with those all-male Republican senators having a free run in the latter part of the of the session, when they where they were basically piling in and piling on in support of Kavanaugh. But the interesting thing about facts and the essence that they could be, I mean, the fact that, as you say, there is a paper trail, not a paper trail exactly, but a fact trail to be pursued, and the reluctance, and this became, of course, a Democrats' talking point, if you were, a tactical tool for them, with perhaps overly repeated emphasis on it, but it's still a very important one, that the one side of this argument did not want to get into the fact business, precisely resisting, not precisely, very loosely and in a very poorly argued way, insisting that there was no need to bring in objective investigators in the shape of the FBI. And Kavanaugh's own exchange with Senator Durbin on the Democrat side was a very clear demonstration of this. There's no logical reason to keep the FBI out of it anymore. And an awful lot of loose ends and an awful lot of bits and pieces of evidence that could be well researched by trained investigators. And that's exactly what was being resisted as the day wore on. And that became clearer and clearer. That's where we're left. We got a belligerent self-assertion on one side and an effort to get proper investigation into the scene on the other side, and we're left with what we're left with.
You don't even have to go to the FBI. When she named two people that should have been invited to come to that and not file papers, but come and speak so people can see what they're like, that's the least that the Senate should have done, was bring in at least the one other person who was supposedly in that room. That was the least that should have been done. But this is American politics 101 now, and never the twain shall meet.
This is my personal opinion, but I felt the same. I hate to say this, but after I watched everybody I knew watched the Clarence Thomas hearings back when, and I sat and I watched, and I was like, well, but we know what's going to happen. And I really found, and this is, any intricacies have absolutely been sort of blurred out. And it's just, you are watching politics, televised politics. The only thing that
raw partisan politics.
And
absolutely.
I have to say that just in my view, it's pretty tedious and doesn't lead to any. It doesn't teach anybody to follow, let's just say, a fact trail.
But it does teach someone that if they think they were abused, they can stand up and have the strength to talk. And then that's the one good thing that I think that came out of that session yesterday.
Well, I'm not sure I would ever want to be a person abused, I mean, in no way would I feel encouraged to come out and speak now in light of what I saw happening there.
I happen to come down on that side, but I can't say I can't say that I find the violation of privacy I have to recuse myself because I am so appalled at what people are happy to post about themselves that I can't.
Yeah, it's been interesting to see a whole lot of people that I have never seen or never heard use this word before. It sounded like a jump back to the Clarence Thomas hearings to say that the whole thing is so unseemly. I mean, it seems such a sort of wussy kind of reaction to have, but I know exactly what they mean. These are different times.
Unfortunately, sexual abuse is unseemly, and
absolutely.
And I'm probably jaded by the fact that I've got a friend of mine that locally just came out with something that happened to him almost 50 years ago. So maybe I am jaded in the fact that
why would that make you jaded?
Because I think that what she did by going in front
okay. Now I understand.
I am influenced by the fact that a classmate of mine, Robbie Wallingford, decided to come forward 50 years afterwards, and announce something and have the town decide now that they're going to investigate it and look into it with a separate investigation. That's what I think was so important about her actually, once she was outed, going to that meeting and saying, listen, I'm going to stand up. I'm going to tell my story. It's not for me to decide who the next Supreme Court judge is going to be, but I'm going to tell my story and leave it at that.
That is so crucial here is that the fact that it is a Supreme Court judge that's being discussed here, and of course the possibility of condition of putting the court into a condition which it will remain in for possibly a generation with the political tilt, and it's become clearer and clearer that this is a political exercise staffing the bench of the Supreme Court of the United States. But here's a thought. It is all so crucial. So much depends upon it. That's why tempers are so heated and overheated. The importance of it was only impressed upon me the day before this hearing when Linda Greenhouse, the legendary New York Times reporter on the Supreme Court, she reported on it for 30 years. She's retired now, of course, and succeeded by the very good Adam Liptak. But she was at a meeting I was at, and she made the point, which is so easily lost in all of this, that we are the only country whose highest court is staffed for a life term, that each of those justices are there till the end of their days. No wonder it's such a crucial issue, but what a peculiar institution to have in a supposedly democratic society. And no wonder that so much depends upon the appointment of one single member of that currently 9-person body. Oh, and incidentally, if you want to stack in that old FDR period phrase, stack the court, did you know that it doesn't have to be 9? There can be any number of justices on that bench. So, and they don't have to be. Nothing in the Constitution says that they have to hold that office for their entire lives either. So if I can take a phrase from another area of American political life, we have a very peculiar institution there.
Yes, and what I think is absolutely fascinating is I didn't know either one of those things, and I'm absolutely happy to have this, shall we say, breaking news, which has been...
Yeah, well, it goes back to 1776.
You don't have to fill a seat. You don't have to fill
an
empty
seat. But you can have more than 9.
You can have more than 9. You could have 1 if you wanted.
I didn't know that you could have more. It would seem to me that if you were trying to change something really, but this is why people just don't want to have.
You would have to get political support for it, of course. And here we are back into the same cesspit, I fear. But all I'm saying is that the way things are currently constructed, it's no wonder that people get so hot under the collar about this particular nomination process. It's to put someone on that court, and will be the and he if this is the person who gets it. And I'm you know, just as an objective journalist, I'm going to have to say that it's 90-something percent certain, as we stand at the moment, that this nominee will be confirmed. But it's also so febrile now because he's going to be there for the rest of his life, and he will tilt the court a certain way for a generation at least.
Thank you very much, David Tereshchuk, The Media Beat.